Support for Waveform comes from Anthropic. So looking for an AI solution for your business, it might be time to check out the Claude 3 family from Anthropic, your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. So whether you're powering a customer chat experience or doing complex R&D or need advanced analysis, Anthropic can help provide you with frontier intelligence. So if you're looking for speed, power, or anything in between, the Claude 3 family offers AI models for a variety of tasks and budgets. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez Brownlee.
And I'm Andrew Manganelli.
And this is a truly random episode. We cover an assortment of things from, let's see, smartphone season being right on the horizon, to NBA vloggers in the bubble in Orlando, to last-minute Samsung event rumors with the Galaxy Note 20 series, to Twitter hacks, Bitcoin, YouTubers whose audiences might have fallen for it if they were in the hack, and everything in between. Let's just get right into it. All right, Andrew, did you know Blackmagic's making a 12K camera now?
I'm pretty sure if you're in the follow anyone on tech Twitter, you had to have known about that.
It's funny because the one number that makes the headline is it's a 12K camera.
Yeah,
but obviously, there's a lot of other interesting things about this camera. Now, I'm not considering switching to it right now. Mm-hmm. I really, really like our RED cameras. Just saying, like everything about them, the UI, mm-hmm. It's not just that it's 8K, but the UI, the color science, the dynamic range, the way it works with Final Cut Pro, RED code, the SSDs, despite their lack of reliability, uh-huh. are super fast. So I'm really happy with our current cameras.
Yeah, right? And you're in the workflow of it as well, which is like a huge thing that people underestimate when it comes to working with stuff like that.
So Blackmagic has been making really compelling cameras for a while. I've seen people shooting with them, other people in even tech YouTube shooting mm-hmm. with them.
I think
so. This is
Random Frank does, and his stuff looks phenomenal.
I've seen people at events with them. So this is the Blackmagic Ursa Mini Pro. So the body is small, but it's the Ursa Mini Pro. It's 12K Super 35 sensor. And when people see that, they're like, well, what do you need 12K for? Obviously, no one's watching a 12K video. Mm-hmm. No one's really finishing in 8K, so why do you need a downsample indicator 8K? It's just a big number, uh-huh. right? But there's a whole bunch of other really cool things about this camera, too. It's got a pretty nice 14 stops of dynamic range. It's a Super 35 sensor, but it can shoot 12K at 60 FPS, and then you can go down to 8K at up to 140 FPS. So there's some pretty cool other things about the camera, and they've clearly been working on their workflow. I've never really considered buying a Blackmagic camera because I don't think they mix well with RED. Okay. And at the end of the day, that's what I come back to as far as mm-hmm. primary camera. But I just think this is hilarious just because of the number. The numbers are awesome.
Imagine something, what could you do in 12K? Is there something right now where for some reason 8K is not enough?
No, there is nothing I can't do in 8K that I could in 12K, other than destroy my storage. I think that's basically it.
Just like absolutely. You could test the Mac Pro even harder.
Yeah, and see, basically. Like, what happens. I tried to download some of the test footage. I couldn't really look at it because I don't have the plugin necessary to view the .b raw files that it spits out. But I just love, it's a, every frame at 12K is 12,288 by 6,480.
Yeah.
So it's 6K tall. And that adds up to 80 megapixels per frame.
That's wild.
So I guess if you do want to do some high resolution photography with a video camera and you want 80 megapixels per frame, you can get a hell of a thumbnail out of an 80 megapixel frame. I guess that's where we're at.
I guess I was also surprised that it's coming in right at like 10 grand also, which is not cheap.
That's Blackmagic though.
Yeah.
You know, like Red cameras are not cheap.
No,
and if you look at any of Red's competitors, they're all undercutting Red in price. But again, we're not buying these cameras because they're cheap. But if you are looking for something in that $10,000 price range, this is probably one of the more compelling options now. So
yeah,
that's pretty sweet. Anyway, sorry I had to lead off with that. But
yeah. So you're changing your name to MKB 12K.
Oh, God.
Is what we've gotten.
If I had a nickel for every time someone asked, I'd probably have this camera by now. No, we had a couple things happen. So the last episode, which was out of the regular schedule, was the interview with Carl Pei. We talked OnePlus Nord. That was an exclusive, of course, and that went on the channel. You can see the video version of it. But now the phone is announced officially, and we've had that video, that impressions video has come out since then. And we also had a dope tech video going over, let's see, giant AirPods, a dual screen laptop, and a 49-inch ultra wide. Which they
I feel like just describing it as a 40. Well, let's talk about that first, because that was clearly the like showstopper of that.
That was a fun one.
It's not just a 49-inch ultra wide. It is one that like wraps around your head and looks like it should be in Tron from like the backside of it.
I remember. Do you remember from CES when we first saw it?
I think I ranted in that video about it. There was
They
were showing it off by playing Overwatch capped at 60 FPS on a. Is it 240?
It's a 240 FPS monitor. Yeah.
That is insane.
So yeah, not only is it a huge ultra wide, it is a huge curved 5K 240 hertz ultra wide. It is everything you could ever want in a huge monitor, I think, and it's impressive.
I think in terms of actually gaming on it though, the only stuff you're really looking to play for that is like simulation, like racing simulators, flight simulators. I would never play a shooter on that game in my life. It would, the HUD to see how much like ammo you have in your gun. Your neck would get sore looking at the bottom right of the screen for something like that.
I'm on the same page as you. I play most of the games I play on PC are racing simulators. I was watching Random Frank P's video. He did a video on this monitor too. He was playing shooters on it, and he actually found that because of the scaling in Windows is kind of weird, the sides of the monitor and your peripheral kind of get really stretched out.
Okay.
And so where things on a flat monitor in your peripheral would still be very small, it stretches them out, and you can see like movement in a mountain far away that you ordinarily wouldn't see.
I guess I could see like Battle Royale kind of where you have to be aware of all your surroundings all the time.
It was like a real advantage, it seemed like.
Huh.
Now, again, I don't play those types of games.
Yeah,
and in the racing sim, it was like, nice. Your left monitor or your left mirror is really to your left instead of right in front of you.
You're actually turning around.
Yeah, so that part was kind of interesting, but I just think it's a crazy looking monitor.
Pretty wild. And then, so interestingly enough, the thumbnail of that is the Asus laptop. What is the name of it again?
So it's the Zephyrus 15. I think it also has ROG in the name. So the Asus ROG Zephyrus 15 Duo.
Okay.
In some order of those words.
Laptop names, everyone's favorite. Pretty sweet too. You have it connected to the G9 monitor, which is wild. And something I found, I immediately wanted to see that when I came in.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the room that has it set up. And what's funny is, since the trackpad is so small because it's on the right side of
the laptop,
you literally have to go edge to edge four times on the trackpad to scroll across the entirety of
I'm surprised
the
G9 it's only
monitor.
Four.
The sensitivity was probably up pretty high, but yeah, think about half of a trackpad trying to get across
an expanse of a monitor. Yeah, no, it's such a funny little laptop. Like I reviewed the first one, or that was in Dope Tech in the first one, and one where it was such a weird concept. It was kind of like a Galaxy Fold where like, I'm going to give it some passes here because I've never really seen a laptop do it quite like this. So when you have this huge second screen, you move the keyboard way to the bottom. So now there's no room for your hands to rest. And now the trackpad's over to the side and you squish everything and it's a weird keyboard layout. But like, I don't know. the screen is kind of cool. So they doubled down on it for this one. So the Duo now tilts up the screen so it's more visible to you when you open the laptop. It's got this cool hinge mechanism. If you just watch the video, we'll link this Dope Tech in the show notes. Yeah, but just watch the hinge open and admire how clean that looks.
Yeah. And then the other thing in there, which was less of a like super high tech bleeding edge, but just a fun thing that we saw were these giant AirPod Bluetooth speakers. I think the only thing besides them being ridiculous, people were wondering why we added them, because we like to have fun sometimes.
It was fun.
Interesting. We got sent to them and we thought they were funny.
That was one of the main things. Sometimes, you know, I share some tech on like Instagram and Twitter, and very few pieces of tech break through to like the outside of tech friend bubble where they ask like, wait a second, what is that? Uh-huh. And I shared the picture of these headphones, and you know, sometimes it's like the new iPhone or like the new Tesla or just something super obvious that people have seen. I shared this picture and I had people on like Ultimate Teams texting me. It was in the Ultimate Group Me's. Like, people are like, what is this? Where can I get it? This is hilarious.
Yeah.
So this is just a fun one.
Yeah. And one little revision we made on it is if someone brought to our attention that I guess 3X Pods is potentially drop shipping those. We just added an extra link if you want to get them on like AliExpress. They're going to be like a third of the price.
They're so cheap.
Yeah. You go into this thing of whether is 3X Pods going to, their shipping times look way faster. If that's what the shipping times was, we didn't get to try that because they sent it to us. So kind of make a buyer's decision there if you really want
You probably don't need two of them, to be honest.
You don't need two of them.
Want to get one of them, that's that link we added. Then we got right to OnePlus Nord. It's finally out. Like, we can just talk about it. Now, the reviews embargo, you guys will see a review a little bit after this podcast comes out. So, again, this isn't a review. But that impressions video sort of made everything official. And I think this Nord is the most well-rounded package next to iPhone SE at the same price.
Okay.
So for those who don't know, the price, it's not coming to North America, but it's €399, 27,999 rupees for starting. And then that's the 8 gig 128 storage version. Then there is a 12 gig 256 model, which is €499 and I think 29,999 rupees. So it's a well-priced phone.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, when I say well-rounded, I mean like basically every single spec of this phone is like an A-, where they're not trying to blow you out the water with a 120 hertz display or anything crazy like in one big category, a huge battery. But everything there is an A-. The screen, let's start there. 6.4-inch OLED, 1080p, 90 hertz. Pretty thin bezels, a little pill cutout at the top. First time OnePlus has ever had dual selfie cameras. Mm-hmm. But it looks like a pretty good screen to me. You get to the cameras on the back. It's the same. Well, I could rant a little bit about the cameras, but it's the same main camera as the OnePlus 8. So it's not quite the best. It's not an A+. It's not like the flagship best of the best camera in this budget, like you might find in an iPhone right now. But A- probably. You know, it's getting pretty good 48 megapixel shots, 12 megapixel binning shots, 8 megapixel ultra wide. Then it is technically a quad camera layout, so you also have a 2-megapixel macro and a 5-megapixel depth sensor. But I'll probably rant a little more about that in the review. I'll get to that. Bottom line is, if you shoot with that 2-megapixel macro and then just turn it off and switch to the regular camera and shoot with that and crop in a little bit, just think about that. Just think about how you might think that would look and then wait for the review. The processor, Qualcomm Snapdragon 765G. I mean, it's not the 800 series, but that's about as good as you can get without the 800 series.
Yeah.
8 to 12 gigs of RAM. Maybe that's A+. I mean,
that's one of the things where, like, if you compare to SE, you're like, okay, that's going to, I mean, you have
yeah,
to
well, anytime
think
you
about,
go spec
yeah,
for
it's
spec.
Very hard spec for spec, but this is one where it's like a very big jump in spec.
I think 8 gigs of RAM for $399 is pretty nice.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
And then the battery, it's 4,115 milliamp hours, and it has the Warp Charge 30T brick in the box, so you're getting fast charging. There's no wireless charging, but that's pretty good. That's A-. It's not like some crazy 5,000-6,000 milliamp hour cell, but that's about as good as I'd expect for that price. So I'm looking at the whole overall package, fingerprint reader under the screen, dual selfie cameras, pretty good battery, pretty good screen, like memory specs, everything at this price seems like a lot of phone for the money. And I think right at the end of the review, I think is the best summary of it, which is the reason people wanted OnePlus to come back to this price point is because they're pretty good at it.
Yeah. I mean, it's what they built their entire company off of. This was like made what made OnePlus OnePlus.
Put them on the map. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. So it's cool seeing them go back, but it's also funny when they make that like this statement about how they're trying to bring a phone back to that price when it's like recreating their origin story, which is
And then the name. Did you read the name reasoning?
I did not.
So Nord it translates to North, and so they want to use this Nord line as their like North Star, as their like guiding principle, as they go back to like leading by example in this space. It was a whole like they really got into the Nord North thing.
I don't know if I get that at all.
You know, I get you trying to every brand does this where they go over the top in some areas where you're like, so why did you put the power button on the bottom instead of the side? And they're like, well, we really thought about the way the human hand is designed. And you're like, no, you didn't. You just put it at the bottom. So sometimes that stuff gets a little carried away, but hey, they're leaning in. So here's a pretty good phone for that price. Again, full reviews coming, but I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's got 5G.
That's all we want these days, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to hop into content we liked real quick. This is a super fast one, but I know it's one both of us enjoyed. And it's updating a content we liked that we mentioned episodes and episodes ago, probably last year. So
Meta.
I think we can both agree our favorite podcast episode maybe ever is Long Distance by Reply All, which goes over Alex Goldman from Reply All goes two episodes really deep into like an Indian scamming phone center. And it's just like super fascinating to see how far he goes and how much he annoys this and all this stuff that happens. But 3 years later, because I somehow that episode's 3 years old, he has some updates for it. He has a couple corrections because he found out some new information since that's happened. And then through that gets back in contact with some people, brings some updates from the old episode. So if you haven't listened to the original episode we're talking about, it's called Long Distance 1 and 2. I think it's episodes like 102 and 103.
It's my favorite podcast episodes I've ever heard in my life.
It's legitimately not only the episode I tell people to listen to if they want to listen to Reply All, but if I know people who don't listen to podcasts, those are the two episodes I tell them to listen to, and they all listen to podcasts now. So super good, really good update episode, probably like 30 minutes long. So real quick road trip or something, pop it on and you'll get some interesting updates for it.
I also have some content I liked.
Okay.
I have a little, there's a YouTube channel. So the NBA, by the time you're listening to this, is right around the corner from coming back.
Okay.
And so there's all these questions about like, so they're playing in this bubble in like Disney World
That's where
Florida.
It's in Disney World in Florida.
Right.
Can I interrupt you there?
Yeah.
And just talk about the vast difference between how they're doing it in Disney World in Florida, which is gotta be like the least safe place.
Yep.
And hockey is doing it, except the two hub cities in hockey are both in Canada because of how much better Canada's doing with all this.
That's a great idea.
So I just find that funny. I've also seen some really funny videos of NBA players and like the meals they're getting. And
well, that's what this is.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Okay, yeah. So there's I think he's a rookie, but a player on the Philly 76ers who's essentially vlogging life in the bubble.
Okay.
And I feel like this, when we look back at this, as far as trying to figure out like what happened in 2020, what was the experience like? I think we should save this. This guy's precious. Okay, so he's editing his own vlogs. So he's an NBA player, but he's making these vlogs from inside the bubble. And you get all this perspective on like how they set up the hotel rooms and like the wristbands they use and all the precautions they take as they go through practice and workouts and actually meeting with people and you really get a look at like everything. The NBA is doing a lot. It's pretty clear they're spending a lot of money to make this as safe as possible. But he's a couple episodes in now. Matisse Thybul, we'll link it in the show notes because it's hard to spell and pronounce, but that channel, I think we're going to come back to this as like food for thought and like learning.
You think
learning.
Our kids are going to watch this in like history class when they're learning about...
Maybe we just like, if something crazy happens in the bubble, we'll look back at like how the NBA was doing. Because the NBA is not telling people publicly like how this works. So I think this is the type of inside look that I felt like was cool to share. So Matisse Thybul's YouTube channel. Keep it up, man. The vlogs are good.
I'm gonna have to watch that. I've only seen, I guess I never knew where they came from, but I've seen videos on like Twitter of like a guy who like didn't get silverware with his food. So he was like, do I have to use the lid for this to scoop it out? And
yeah, it's just, you feel like you're part of that life. That's what vlogs are for, right?
Yeah,
right. You feel like you're in that perspective. Mm-hmm. Also, quick Tesla update, because I don't think I've talked about Tesla yet today. there's an Electric article by Fred Lambert on, basically they're calling it Tesla's secret project Palladium, which is a new Model S and Model X that are coming.
Okay.
That potentially use new batteries, have longer range, have triple motors, and are like the new Model S and X.
Okay.
I'll link the article. It's an interesting read. You don't really have that much like concrete information. It's mm-hmm. more of just like they're working on new drive units. They're working on this will have a new battery. It is essentially a plaid version. Like a lot of code speak and mm-hmm. not a lot of like numbers or anything like that, which is fine because the product's not out. But I just found it an interesting read. And I also feel like every time I buy a new product from them, they immediately make a new one to make mine outdated. So this is perfect. This is perfect. So we got all that. It'll all be linked below.
Is that the hardest thing about owning a Tesla, is knowing that it's going to get better? Or I feel like it's either it's going to get better very quickly, or there's going to be a price drop on it like immediately. I know Quinn all the time is like, I wish I waited one more month because it dropped this. Right.
You know what? For me, just because I'm so used to buying tech, I have to be comfortable with the idea that the product I buy mm-hmm. is eventually at some point going to be outdated.
Yeah.
I complain. Maybe I shouldn't so much, but I complain because the timing is usually like Tesla does tons of minor updates. So mm-hmm. I'll get my car, and then 2 weeks later they change the seats and the headrests are better. I'm like, oh, well, you know, that happens when you buy tech. But like, it'll be a major, major new thing. Like, I remember I got my first Model S, and then like a week later, all new autopilot hardware to permanently set the future for the vision system in Teslas. I was like, well, that's pretty rough. Okay, it was a little bit wrong with the timing there. But I think once you get in, you have to be comfortable that what you're getting is what you want, and that's fine.
Do you think Tesla will ever go a route where like you see, so every other car manufacturer, no matter when you buy your car, the next year something is going to be updated, and you just know that. But generally, those companies have a plan in terms of like generations of things. So I know, mm-hmm. I know Subaru the best, and I know that the majority of their cars every 4 year gets like a generation update.
It's kind of like buying a phone.
Yeah, in that way. I guess. Yeah. Do you think Tesla ever will get to that route where like the major generational upgrades will be X amount of years away, and you'll kind of know more so, am I going to wait an extra year and go the big jump, or am I just going to get this minor upgrade and understand?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think Tesla is so based on the development of their tech that mm-hmm. if they set like goals for themselves or public goals where there's going to be a new one in X years, then they're going to get to a point where they're like rushing things to finish it by a certain time, and then they'll miss out on stuff, and then it just won't be as good as it could be. I think Tesla's strength has been ignoring like those, you know, paradigms that have existed in the audio industry for so long, where like they don't need to do dealerships the way everyone else does. They mm-hmm. can push a software update to your car.
True,
that's a big difference.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, having the model year thing works for some, and I don't think it's necessarily the best move for Tesla to switch to that. So I think they'll just keep updating things as the tech gets better.
Cool.
Yeah, but we've gone a little bit. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about some Note 20 stuff. We got a bunch more phones, and then, you know, that whole Twitter hack thing that happened. We'll talk about that too. Be right back.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So it can be tough to stay organized when your team is spread across time zones.
With Coda, you can help keep your whole team on the same page with an all-in-one collaborative workspace that brings together the best of documents, spreadsheets, and apps into one platform. That means less time ping-ponging between different tabs and tools and more time on your projects. So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned when managing planning cycles and while measuring objectives and key results. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So over 50,000 teams across the world collaborate with Coda, from the New York Times to Square, from Toast to TED and Uber. So if you want a platform that enables and empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. You can head over to coda.io/wave. So that's Coda, coda.io/wave to get started for free. Coda.io/wave.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, so we're back. And on the script here, I actually have Asus ROG3 phone as the next topic. But overnight, we actually delayed this podcast because it was raining so hard last night. We had to do it in the morning.
It was too loud.
It was too loud. And it worked out well. A bunch of Note 20 leaks came out. And while I wanted to talk about ROG phone first, Marquez hasn't seen the leaks yet. And he just asked me if we could do Note 20 first because he wants to find out.
This is so, let me just say before you get into this, yeah. I usually am pretty on top of leaks, mm-hmm. right? We got the invites to Samsung's events. We're going to have our hands on. All that's going to happen. But I just feel like the Samsung stuff has gotten so predictable that I see some of the leaks and I just sort of like mentally skim it and I'm like, yeah, I know what it is. Uh-huh. And I don't know. Something about this one, I just haven't paid too much attention.
This one, I wouldn't say there are that many huge surprises, but there are a couple ones that you wouldn't expect and I think could be an interesting topic of conversation.
So all right, let's see it.
Can we say the biggest thing we were wondering is if we heard about the Note 20 Ultra, if we were debating if there's going to be a Note 20, a Note 20 Plus, and a Note 20 Ultra.
If that would be something. A thing.
Yeah, so it looks like two phones. I think Ultra is just the Plus.
Okay.
And then there's going to be a regular one. So we'll go over both of those. What do you want to do first? Ultra, I'm guessing.
Sure, let's see the Ultra. The big one, good one.
So I have everything listed out here. One thing to note is these are German leaks, so we don't have Snapdragon. We have Xenos chip.
Oh, Exynos.
Like,
yeah,
Exynos. Is that how you pronounce?
Exynos.
Should know that by
now. So I'm seeing 6.9-inch, 1440p, 120 hertz, with an Infinity O hole punch. Yup,
I expected that. Not surprised by that.
Mm-hmm. Gorilla Glass 7. Honestly, what's the difference between Gorilla Glass 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7? You'd really have to explain it to me, and maybe I'll notice, but I probably will just see it as stronger glass. 108 megapixel main camera. Sounds about right. 12 megapixel ultra wide. 12 megapixel telephoto. Okay. Primary camera will record 8K. Okay, that's about what I expected. Periscope style lens, 5X optical, 50X space zoom. Samsung decided to drop the 100X space zoom. Oh, okay. Honestly, that's fine.
Yeah, no,
nobody was missing that.
It sounds weird, but I'm almost more excited for 50X. Like,
well, you could already do 50X. It just wasn't the furthest.
Yeah, true. I'm hoping that means that they focused a little more into getting the 50 times like a little nicer. But
I mean,
I'm not going to expect anything out of a 50 times zoom.
Right. The thing I said about the 100X is like, don't ever go to 100X. But the fact that they've engineered it to be able to go that far means that at 50X, it'll be a little better than most others. Mm-hmm. Maxing out at 30X, you know? So
yeah.
I guess that's
fine. Talked about zoom as more of a like, if you are zooming in that far, it is more to prove that you saw something
utility.
Rather than, like
pure utility
aesthetics.
So, okay. Reverse wireless charging. Yup. In-screen fingerprint reader. Sure. Exynos 990, 12 gigs of RAM for that German version. Sure. 256 or 512 of UFS 3.1 storage. That's about as high-end as you can get. Mm-hmm. Nice. Micro SD card slot. Was that gone in the previous note?
No, I think it had it. Because weren't we talking about how you could get it to like a terabyte? Or no, you could get it to, because they have terabyte micro SD cards.
Yeah,
now,
so it'd be like a terabyte and a half or something crazy.
Okay. Wild.
It's good that they keep doing that. I mean, that's maybe one of the last flagship phones like at this level left that has expandable storage. So that's cool. Okay, first phone with optimized cloud gaming via Project X Cloud. Neat. I guess that's a little Microsoft collab.
Yeah, so you get like 90 gaming titles through Xbox Game Pass, and they're calling it a portable gaming console, which...
I'm sure that'll make Asus happy. No, yeah, that's just kind of like the arcade feature.
Yeah, it's Apple. It's something that sounds really cool, and I'm sure, like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to... That's anything that's going to sell this phone,
maybe,
to be honest.
Yeah. It's a nice perk, though. 4,500 milliamp hour battery that will go from flat to 50% in 30 minutes with a bundled charger. Sure. 4,500. Yeah, that's fine. And then your S Pen, 9 millisecond latency, same as the Apple Pencil. That's great.
That's great. I think that is the most underrated spec bump to this phone right
I'm
now.
Curious what the latency number was before.
I think I was reading somewhere around, and I'm not exactly sure, but I think it was 26.
Oh, so, wow.
I mean, just Apple Pencil. I think I heard the theoretical best limit or like latency you could get on a 120 hertz screen was 8. So if they're within one of that, you are very close. And we talk about Apple Pencil just being hands down the best.
It's incredible.
Like, touch screen pencil. So if they're at the same latency, it has to be very close. And that is, if you like the S Pen, I feel like this is a huge upgrade.
Yeah, I remember actually the latency was pretty great on the previous S Pen. Like, I remember scribbling around with it and being like, yeah, this is really tight. But at the same time, when you say like Apple Pencil, like that is gold standard level.
Wild.
I don't even need a stylus. I don't have any good use for it. My handwriting is trash. I can't draw for my life, but I have an Apple Pencil and I keep it on my iPad and I'll use it anytime I get the chance. So yeah, that's that latency number, which just basically brings down the lag between when you're touching the screen and when it's responding screen. So that's cool.
I think people were also saying how, or maybe not people, but the leak article was talking about how that could be beneficial and be playing into this like Project X Cloud and gaming stuff. And if you're using a stylus for stuff like gaming, having a lower latency is potentially
better. Using a stylus
I've never
for gaming?
Thought about that as for gaming, but I guess...
I don't think people use a stylus for gaming, do they?
What I don't know what people actually game on.
I also don't know what people really use this stylus for besides S Pens, notes.
I mean, like, I'm trying to think of the way you, like, I know people play Fortnite on phones, which is wild to me because that game on a PC, you need like 800 keys to play it because there are 1,000 different things you can do.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, in terms of the shooting part, having a pencil is a little more touch
Tap
accurate because instead of, like, your big ass thumb pressing it, maybe like,
you're like
I don't
extra
know.
Precise. Who knows? Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean,
I'm all for lower latency on literally everything. So
then 5G. Yep. And wireless DEX connection. Nice.
Pretty cool. Okay. So I think the bigger, weirder surprises are on the regular Note 20.
Okay. Cause pretty much all of Note 20 Plus or Ultra that I just read was like what I was expecting.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why I think the S Pen is still a really cool update that people aren't going to really pay attention to. But if you compare it to Apple Pencil, I think that's where it shines. But
okay.
So for regular Note 20 now.
Regular Note 20. Okay. So it's got, says here, vanilla model will come with a flat screen as we remember before, but also change the metal sides rails.
The side rails are metal.
Oh, and a plastic back.
That's plastic different. A plastic back?
Why would they switch to a plastic back? That confuses me. You can do wireless charging and everything you want on a Note with glass, and the Note is not a cheap phone, so I'm a little...
That's another interesting thing. We don't have prices here yet.
Yeah.
So that's what makes this section very interesting. Does this look like we're going to see the regular Note 20 have a huge price decrease? Or is the Ultra going to have a giant price bump and they're going to make a big gap between both of them?
I'll make a prediction after I read the rest of this because I kind of have a thought on this.
Sure.
So Note 20 will also have 4G and 5G versions, with the former being ever so slightly cheaper. Yeah, okay. 6.7-inch, 1080p, Super AMOLED with a 60 hertz refresh rate.
That is a big difference between the top model and the bottom.
Versus, what was it, 6.9?
Physical size, worse resolution, and half the refresh rate.
Wow.
So, like, that is a completely different screen.
Okay, all of this is feeding into my theory about the new Note. So, okay, great. Underscreen fingerprint reader, sure. 8 gigs of RAM, 256, no micro SD card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. 12 megapixel ultra wide camera. 64 megapixel 3x camera. I don't think there's a primary camera mentioned here, but
probably. Oh, sorry, 12 megapixel primary and a 12 megapixel ultra wide.
Wow.
Both 12. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. 64 megapixel 3x zoom, 30x hybrid zoom, 4300 milliamp hour battery, which will go from 0 to 50 in 30 minutes with the adapter in the box, wireless charging, reverse wireless charging, and the old S Pen with 26 millisecond latency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow.
That was a little more surprising than you were expecting, right?
Yeah. So it was interesting. When the Notes came out last year, for the first time, it went from here's our big phone and our even bigger phone to here's our Note and here's our small Note.
Yeah. And I think our biggest argument with that is that the smaller Note should have had the same specs, and you should have just gotten to pick the size
because
of
their
the
prices were similar. Yeah. Okay. So I think this is Samsung trying to cozy you up to buying the bigger one by giving you, like, I mean, they're going to sell a lot of the smaller one because it's probably, based on what I'm reading, going to be significantly cheaper. If you have
hopefully,
but I mean, if you're going this much different, if you're going 60 hertz max refresh, that's already saying something about the phone, where you're just not willing to spend the money and do 120 hertz on this phone, where you're not going to do the full-on 50x space zoom, you're not going to do the new S Pen. All this to me screams like $300-$400 price difference, hopefully.
Okay.
And then you kind of position the Note 20 Ultra or Plus right next to it, and you're like, but look at what you could get. And that's fine. I feel like that's just having a cheaper version of this phone available for people who are going to get like a cheaper Note and get into the Note thing and really like it, and then get the more expensive Note the next year. That's one way to do it. But yeah, it's like a different way of doing Note.
If you're basing prices, or if you're assuming prices are $300-$400 difference, then what, if you had to guess two prices right now, where are they?
Okay. So if I was guessing, I would say that Note 20 Plus will be $1,199, and this Note 20 is going to be
$899. My theory on people who will buy the Note 20 is, every time we've mentioned who uses an S Pen, we have people reach out, and all of those are generally contractors, landscapers, like electricians, people who are doing stuff inside households. Like, I don't want to say handyman, because that, I don't know if that lessens the experts who are doing like manual labor on houses and stuff, and need to be able to show their clients firsthand what they are doing. So if you're a landscaper, you're going out into the backyard, you can snap a picture of it, draw what you want to do with the shrubs, add trees, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who use the S Pen there. I don't know if all of them are going to care. Like, if I'm doing manual labor like that, I probably don't want a $1,300 phone in my pocket while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So that smaller size, I don't care about 120 hertz when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the resolution being insane. Like, I don't care about all these other things. I might care about a micro SD card slot if I'm doing that many jobs, but I could see this, the cheaper version being better for the construction worker,
right,
the people who need that S Pen on the field.
So I agree with all of that.
Uh-huh.
And if all of that is true, most people we're hearing who use the Note are this person, and this cheaper Note is better for those people, then who's going to buy the more expensive Note?
That I have a harder time figuring that out, besides, you know, just saying tech enthusiasts. But like, as much as we like to think there are millions of tech enthusiasts because we deal with them all the time, like, that doesn't seem like a big enough sales market to like really focus on. But
interesting.
You never know. And the thing is no matter what price any of these are at, when it gets into a carrier store, they're the ones who have salesmen who are going to
decide
convince
what sells.
People. And when you break these things down into monthly payments, like on a carrier service, everything changes, because then it doesn't seem like a $400 or $500 difference. It seems like a $20 a month difference.
I'm just,
and people
so
are more open to that.
This plastic back thing is really.
I want to see what it is.
Because I think we need to know more than just that it's plastic. Mm-hmm. I think there's something else to this. Like, if there's some design that's enabled by it, or some extra durability or something. Why is it plastic?
Or a big price cut.
Like a really big price
cut.
Yeah. Because I could see if you took the, think about this. Take the name off of it, and, you know, take the Samsung Galaxy Note branding off of it, and you just see the specs by any manufacturer. A 60 hertz 1080p OLED, 8 gigs of RAM, 12 megapixel camera, 4,300 milliamp hour battery. That could easily be a pretty inexpensive phone. Like, I'm trying to imagine a Note coming in at like $699, $799. Is that what we're going
with? If it could be coming at $699, I think that would be wild. That'd be
interesting.
That would be really nice. So what's the last plastic back phone we've really seen in here? Was it Pocophone? Did we have another one?
There's been that. Yeah, it's kind of rare at this point because even the budget ones that are getting good are trying to get to metal and glass. You know what's funny? The OnePlus Nord, the rails, I actually misspoke in the video. I said it was metal and glass. It is glass on the front and back, metal buttons, plastic rail.
Really?
Yeah. So that's a little...
I did not notice that when I picked small, it up.
Yeah, small. Exactly. So that's like one way to say, like, if we're going to get a plastic back on this phone, it seems like a lot of material. Yeah. But, you know, plastic rails is okay.
The last time we talked about plastic back, though, we were kind of mentioning that, like, in when you're thinking of budget phones and phones that are trying to cut prices, like, plastic back is something we wouldn't have minded.
Yeah, I think it gets a bad rap.
You're putting it in a case, you're putting a skin on it, they're not awful looking backs either. Samsung might even bring us one that looks super similar. It doesn't get fingerprints. This could be a way that we're seeing like mainstream, you know, big companies bringing a plastic back and maybe people are going to really love it.
Imagine a world where we've always had glass backs and we're suddenly realizing, wait, what about this all new revolutionary material that's less breakable, that's more durable, doesn't get fingerprints, still wireless charges, and is cheaper?
I also have to bring up the last time we talked about plastic backs, you and I both had a debate on if wireless charging worked in it. And
oh, it definitely
we were
does.
Very, very wrong. I don't know why that blends so hard. There were so many things we missed, like the fact that people put plastic cases on their phone and it still works.
Yeah,
but I still get tweets every week of people who must be going through the backlog and listening like, hey, just wanted to let you know, blah, 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 phone had a plastic back and wireless charging. Or,
yeah.
Hey, you total moron. Like, I put a case on my phone and it wireless charges. You probably do too. So you know plastic works. So yeah, huge mistake on our part back
then. Maybe plastic backs is the way to go. Maybe that's what we're going to find out with Note 20.
2021 plastic back iPhone.
We'll see. We'll keep an eye on this phone. I had a great segue, but we went way past it. But I'm gonna go all the way back to it. So you know how you were saying we were like, who's gonna buy the Note 20 Plus or Ultra? Speaking of who's gonna buy this phone, boom, ROG Phone 3 sitting right here in front of
me. Wait, I actually don't think I've held this yet.
So I just reviewed the ROG Phone 3. Quite possibly, I mean, pretty confidently right now, the most maxed out spec sheet you will ever see. Not ever. You have seen ever up to this point in a phone. That's facts, right? It's a 144 hertz, 6.6-inch screen. It's an OLED. It's got the fingerprint reader under the glass. It's one of the first phones with a Snapdragon 865 Plus, which clocks up to 3.1 gigahertz in a phone, 16 gigs of RAM, 8K video, 64 megapixel
how much
camera.
Does this laptop have right now?
6,000 milliamp hour battery, dual stereo front facing speakers, 6 times larger heatsink inside, RGB glowing logo on the back. I mean, did I miss anything? Like, this phone is packed to the gills. Now, here's what I'll say. Really interesting omissions in this phone. Because we've painted this as a gaming phone and the enthusiast, the ultimate, like, no lag, no latency phone. There is no headphone jack built into this phone this year, which is fascinating to me. But
I think that's kind of weird.
I kind of gave it this pass because in the box, it includes this adapter, this little fan cooling thing where as you're gaming, you just plug this thing in and it gives you a headphone jack, another USB Type-C port on the side, and a little kickstand, and it pops up, and boom, you're gaming.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it comes with something to make up for that in the box already. It also has a dongle, but I don't know. I feel like you could have built that in to the phone, which that was kind of a weird omission to me.
Yeah, especially because the battery size doesn't change at all. It does have 5G though, right?
It has the bigger modem, has 5G.
That's probably going to be where they're saying they
potentially. I didn't reach out to them and ask why no headphone jack, but that was the assumption. Same footprint though of the whole phone. It's also missing an IP rating and wireless charging. So that's, you know, it's not the
those are full ones that we weren't that
yeah,
it's not awful, but
yeah.
I just want to also say the Razer laptop I'm using right now has 16 gigs of RAM.
The MacBook Pro I'm using right now, which costs a couple grand. Oh, it has 64 gigs. Jesus.
Yeah, you're probably bumped out there with.
I've been living the life with all this RAM, but yeah, it's a crazy spec sheet for a phone. Yeah. Now I can't tell the difference between 120 and 144.
You can't.
I thought I could, and then I started going back and forth more, and I think that was a placebo. I don't think I can actually see the difference. Now I'm not mad they made it 144.
Yeah, I think. If you were to, I think I've mentioned this before, but I think a difference between 120 and 144 would have to be on one specific thing you are super, super in tune with. And I think like when it comes to people playing games 6 to 7 hours a day, and then like, so when it comes to like a first person shooter at 144 hertz, like 120 to 144, you might notice a little different.
And that's if the game supports it. Because some games just won't.
Yeah, well, yeah, and on phones, almost no games support that. It's kind of like how you're so used to 24 frames a second and 30 frames a second. Like,
right.
Most people probably wouldn't see a huge difference in that, but when you get really used to both of them, a little weirder.
For me, the calibrating was on the UI, like scrolling through the app drawer and like multitasking and like opening and closing stuff. And that's where I really appreciate high refresh rate. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think I would be able to best tell the difference. And even in that, I was like, it looks great at 120, looks great at 144. I think the most incredible thing about this phone was I left it at 144, so max frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I got two legit full days.
That's wild.
They were light days, to be fair, but I've never gotten two full days.
But a light
days.
Day for you is probably a fairly regular day for most people.
It ended up being I played some golf and I had a GPS app on the phone and I did navigation with Waze and there was random social media happening, but that was like 2 days of that, and I had 6 hours of screen on time at the end of 2 days. Two full days at the end of like 9:30 p.m. I had 3% battery at 144 hertz.
That's crazy.
That was, to me, it was like, dude, if I ever want to go a weekend, I'll just set it to 60 and I will not have to worry.
If you want to go on vacation for a week and you forget your charger set on 60,
you'll be good, man. You'll be good.
Yeah. And then every time I think about something like that, I think about how they wouldn't even hard set the Pixel 4 to 90 hertz because it was killing the battery too fast. So
to be fair, they have an auto setting on the ROG phone where it will pick a frame rate for you based on what's going on. And I think that would save some battery. I just wanted to lock it at 144 because I was like, I want to use all the hertz. Give me all the pixels, please. So I did. Turned out pretty good. That phone, the review is up. It starts at $1,000 and it's just absolutely packed. So anyway, that's about it. Let's take another quick ad break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Bitcoin. We'll talk about Twitter.
Elon being the new scammer of the century.
Just a bunch of stuff that happened. So we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. Let's get into what happened on Twitter last week.
Okay.
So I was on Twitter when all this was happening.
I was following your updates on Slack. So
oh, man.
This is wild.
So let me just tell the story of what happened from my perspective and how I was feeling as it was happening.
Okay.
Okay. Stage one, Elon tweet. This is like chapter one, right? So I'm on Twitter. As I just have a Twitter app open and there's this tweet. Oh, I wonder if I can find, I just want to read the tweet. But it was something along the lines of, hey, I'm feeling really generous in these COVID times. I just want to kind of give back. So here's what we're doing. Send me any Bitcoin you want to this address. I will double it and send it back to you. Here's a Bitcoin wallet, string of characters, only doing this for half an hour, go.
And so this has like been before it hit that, for like the last 2 or 3 years, what people would do is they would change their profile picture and their name to Elon Musk and tweet, after every Elon tweet, directly underneath it would be a fake Elon saying pretty much the exact same thing. I'll double your money because I'm rich and send money to this Bitcoin account.
Yeah.
Then it got to the point where they were hacking people with check marks, but they were usually very small verified ones, and then they would change all their stuff to look like Elon again and try and pull the same stuff. So this is like the mecca of this,
right?
This scam.
And Elon,
that's been going on.
Elon, you know, he tweets all the time, but he's tweeted about like, you know, crypto in the past. He's tweeted random stuff even since this has happened. But when I saw this tweet, so this is chapter one, I'm like, well, okay, this is textbook I got hacked type of tweets,
yeah,
which makes me think it could also easily be Elon trolling.
100% is what I thought.
And then like half an hour later, he'd be like, you guys are all idiots. I just sent all your money back. What are you doing? But like, I don't know. Something about this to me was like, it could conceivably have been Elon tweeting this. And to me, I just talked up to, this is a dumb tweet, but okay, whatever. Let's just see what happens.
Off the rails again.
Yeah, a little wild. He's been known to be a little wild on Twitter, so okay, fine. So that's chapter one, right? Literally, I want to say like 2 minutes later, Bill Gates' account on my timeline, because I follow them both, tweets the exact same thing. And the second I saw that, I was like, oh, wow, that's a kind of a big deal. So yeah. Somebody at some point got access to both Elon's account and mm-hmm. Bill Gates' account and tweeted the same thing. Now it seems like people are actually going to maybe fall for this. Like Bill Gates, like, of course you're targeting billionaires' Twitter accounts yeah. where they'd believe they'd send you back money. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates, very, very philanthropic, donates money all the time. You know what? Maybe this is legit. Now,
you're saying Bitcoin doubling is going to be the next Bill and Melinda Gates foundation letter.
This is also the thing to me. I saw this happening, and there is people using essentially like trackers to be able to see like how much mm-hmm. money was going to these accounts. And,
yeah.
you know, money starts piling in. People start sending this account money, tons of transactions in, $0 out. People keep doing it anyway. And in my head, I'm like, what type of person is smart enough to have a Bitcoin wallet and see that string of characters and know what to do with it, but also dumb enough to see that tweet and send it to a stranger?
It's a weird... They have made Bitcoin way easier. Like, stuff like Coinbase makes the whole wallet.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, yeah, people, like why would you even get Bitcoin in the first place? Like, if you're that savvy that you're going to get into it at all, and then you see this tweet and you're like, I know what I'll do with my Bitcoin now. I
mean, based on how much that got sent there, we know there are quite a few people that...
Yeah, there's some people.
I have it down to that wallet in the first couple hours made almost 13 Bitcoin, which is like $120,000.
Well, so it kept going. So chapter three was, you know, Uber's account, Jeff Bezos' account, Apple's account, Joe Biden's account, Barack Obama's account, and it just keeps going and going and going. It's like the absolute pillars of the most followed yeah. people on Twitter with the biggest followings or the most money, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And you know what's funny? Tossed in there just for fun, Mr. Beast's account.
I missed that.
Mr. Beast, the only non-politician billionaire on that hacked list was Mr. Beast.
Okay. I did not know that, and that changes the way I think about this so much. Now I'm wondering, I wish we could track where the dollar amounts came from based on who saw whose audience profile.
Oh, God.
Because Mr. Beast is a totally plausible one. He gives out money all the time.
Exactly. That's why why they went to his account for that.
They would have been so much smarter to only go after Mr. Beast's account and not made it very
Elon
obvious.
And Mr. Beast would have been the two most likely, I think, as far as whose audience probably fell for it the most monetarily, it's probably the two of those. But yeah, once you start seeing this, like Apple's account just doesn't even tweet. So as soon as you see that, you're like, I know for a fact the @Apple Twitter account has massive security behind it in some way. Yeah. This isn't someone hacking an account. This is someone hacking Twitter. So mm-hmm. once you see that and you're like, all right, well, I guess anyone's account's vulnerable. They're just going down a list. Pretty sure anyone could just see anyone tweet this on my timeline and it would be fine. I think some people were poking fun at it too, like, yeah, send me Bitcoin too. But yeah, 100 something grand ended up going to this wallet and disappearing. It's Bitcoin, by the way. I think I tweeted, don't send Bitcoin to strangers, as like a, not only did the Escobars try this, but you shouldn't send Bitcoin to strangers. So that's, I guess, chapter three or four or whatever it is. Chapter five is Twitter locks tweeting from verified accounts. So obviously a lot of the targets to these attacks are verified accounts. So there's a little moment on Twitter, and it lasted a couple hours, where verified accounts could not tweet as they were like fixing the problem internally.
Mm-hmm.
And also allegedly as they figure this out, like parts of this scam are that they would go in using this internal tool at Twitter that they'd gained access to, and they would like reset an account's password, gain access to it and tweet from it. Mm-hmm. And so the natural reaction, I guess, when you see that happening is to reset your own password because, wow, I'm a verified account and people are getting hacked right now. Let me just change my password. I didn't, but people who did that also got locked for longer because
really?
They saw accounts with verified checks resetting passwords and they got even more like naturally locked down about that. So there was a little moment on Twitter where it was just no blue checks and everyone was having a free for all and it was kind of hilarious.
That's really funny. I can't imagine how many conspiracy theorists were freaking out that their account was shadow banned or like actually banned or something like that. Yeah. I'm sure there was some wild stuff going on until they realized it was just a hack.
And eventually everything's calmed down. But I think a lot of these accounts like haven't tweeted since as they're like being probably forensically investigated internally to like figure out exactly what happened. But I think basically they want to know like what was exposed because people, once you get access to an account, you have everything.
Or DMs.
You have like DMs, exposed. You have whatever that, you know, the apps that are connected to it, whatever. You have a lot of stuff. So, yeah, the people who did this clearly had a plan. They just...
Did you see how they're suspecting it happened?
Essentially, the way Twitter has described it is it's some sort of social engineering where they were able to convince someone at Twitter to give them or sell them access to this tool, or they just ended up hacking an account of someone at Twitter. There's an article that sort of goes into this. I found
another thing though that was saying they somehow got into a Twitter Slack channel and credentials were posted in a Slack channel.
Oh, wow.
And that got them access to some sort of tool that not necessarily let them get straight into the accounts, but let them change the email address associated with the account so that'll then you do can it. Do a password reset to an email account that you have access to already, therefore, right. Which seems wildly unsafe. Like
you just have
credentials.
That?
I mean, and it doesn't surprise me like to have a shared credential or something in like a Slack is generally pretty secure, like, but if someone gets, you're just adding another way for someone to get in and then you don't expect something like that. So that's not great. I do have a Medium article from somebody who, I forget exactly who they were, but somebody who owns an account that is like a very big verified account, and they were worried through all of this, and they just wrote a really, really good write-up about kind of everything that happens and how they think it all went down. We'll post that in the show notes.
Yeah. But yeah, now there's like a, I mean, everything's basically back to roughly normal since all of that's happened, and I guess that's like chapter 5 is like return to normal Twitter. Verified accounts can tweet again, yay, everyone's back. But also lesson learned, Twitter is probably going to be looking into this for a while because this is, I think, the biggest account compromise publicly probably of all time. Like, we've seen a lot of private data breaches and things like that.
A little different
where though. There's like, you know, X million accounts, but like when the headlines are so obvious. It's like, oh, Barack Obama, just pick any like three or four names from that list and just say these people all got hacked. And it's obviously not exactly what happened, but now that's embarrassing for Twitter as a platform.
With some of the like the scope of some of those people and DMs, because if we're assuming they reset a password, that means they're physically going into the account and most likely have access. And I'm hoping that some of those people are not doing classified information kind of conversations in DMs, but
yeah, I don't know. I
wouldn't be surprised by some of
them. When you have Elon's and Bill Gates and Barack Obama's accounts, like that's
I have a feeling Bill Gates is not DMing a lot of people, but I am sure Elon Musk is DMing a lot of people and probably sending some crazy stuff that he doesn't. There's a lot of stuff that could possibly, and I'm sure those people are very worried about what could potentially be out there.
I think that's Twitter's job now is to go back to investigate, to find out all the buttons that were pressed and all the things that were viewed and whatever is compromised, and to do their best to mitigate that. But yeah, that happened. That was a lot. Now, one of the other things that we were talking about was like, okay, one of the most obvious big accounts that didn't tweet this was Donald Trump's account, the president's account. And my theory is there's probably like one extra layer of some kind of security in front of that account, right? Because if you wanted to maximize your Bitcoin money, you would also tweet from that account, no?
Yeah, I mean, my other... It's like a weird... I don't know. I don't know enough about security stuff like that. My initial thought was that if somebody were to go after the president, no matter who the president is, you're just opening yourself up into a way bigger investigation. I think, like, you are automatically just, like, FBI, like, they are on your case right off the bat, I feel like. Whereas this,
interesting,
most likely something like that's going to happen. But if you're going to attack a sitting president, I think you are in, you full stop, you are going to be investigated.
You're
going to
be in jail.
And they are going to find you very, very quickly. So,
right. So feels, the level of crime, basically, when you go from all of these other, you know, Jeff Bezos, Apple, mm-hmm. even Joe Biden, who's running for president,
and former president. Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to all these levels and it's like, I guess technically you could tweet crazy things from their account and not get in federal trouble. But once you add the president's Twitter, I would imagine, I'm not an expert at law in any way, but I imagine you open yourself up to, you know, you're going to get caught. Like when you do 17, 18 accounts or whatever it is, you know, you're going to get caught. So you're just doing it as long as you can and just getting away with as much money as possible.
Yeah.
I think when you know you're going to get caught, you just want to remove that level of like federal prison, probably, if that's something they consider. I don't know. It was just like I was just waiting for it. Cause obviously the joke on Twitter as it was happening was like, it's only a matter of time before your account and probably Donald Trump's.
You were going to be...
I was worried, yeah.
In any way, are you upset that you weren't cool enough to be one of the hacks?
No, I think I thought that at first because I saw him going down the list. And as soon as I saw Mr. Beasts, I was like, oh, we're here now.
Okay.
Like, because I saw all the politicians and all the billionaires. And I was like, well, that's... That's what you would expect to try to scam people is like use their accounts because they're full of money. But as soon as they went to, I think I saw it when they did Apple's account, because like Apple's not a person and they're not like the type of like, hey, I'm sending money to my community, like feeling not generous, you know what I mean? So when I saw Apple's account, I was like, all right, they're just going for highly followed, highly engaged accounts.
Yes.
And then after that was Mr. Beast's account. And so to me, it was like, oh, I guess it's anyone. I guess,
let's theory craft here.
Okay.
If we were those hackers and we wanted to pick the five YouTubers accounts that we could.
Five YouTubers?
YouTubers, not other social media. So YouTubers, potentially people we know. Who would be the best five accounts to try and make
scam the most people?
Money
possible. So who's got the most?
I mean, Mr. Beast is clearly number one. So they picked that one correctly.
Which
for
was smart.
Multiple reasons. Follower count and... generosity
and habits of philanthropy. Yeah. Okay.
If we had to go next,
you'd have to look at other YouTubers who do giveaways a lot, I think.
Yeah, in that sense, or I guess just like fan base, maybe like people who would potentially fall for that. And I don't want to make too many assumptions, but
yeah, because I don't know. Look, I'm looking at the YouTubers, and I think I can sort of craft like what I think their audience is.
I think there would be some gaming personalities who would be good to go after, especially, and I'd say Fortnite players. they generally have a younger audience and younger audience might not have Bitcoin. So there's a lot to think about here. But
right. That's the thing. You have to think about who actually is going to have Bitcoin.
I mean, so one of those
Bitcoin.
Ninja would be a great one because his following is insanity on Twitter and on YouTube and on Twitch or Mixer, wherever he is now. He would be a good one to go after, a younger audience. I just always, whenever I think of big YouTubers, I just always think of Casey Neistat. So, it wouldn't surprise me if Casey just came out of nowhere. Actually, right now,
feeling generous.
Ethan and Hila are giving away money every day.
Oh, true.
Actually, they're probably just finishing that up, but they just did 100 days of giving away money. So, H3, probably not bad.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's actually around, I think that's four or five right there. So. Yeah.
Jeez. Well,
Look out, guys.
Like, I think now
when those four accounts get hacked, you know Andrew and Marquez are behind.
For sure, right? No, the moral of the story is, number one, Bitcoin, don't send Bitcoin to places where you might not want to get it back.
Yeah.
That's like, don't send Bitcoin to strangers.
If you're paying in Bitcoin, there's a pretty
think about
good,
why.
Yeah.
Think about why. I think that's the that's the moral
it's
of the
probably
story.
Probably illegal.
If you're sending Bitcoin kind of to sketchy. Someone, think about why. That's number one. And then number two, I don't know, have two-factor on, protect your account, have a strong password, use a password manager. All that stuff is smart.
Don't post your credentials in Slack.
Don't post your credentials somewhere. If you work for Twitter, just stay safe out there, you know? That's basically it. No, it was a wild moment on my timeline, and I was just kind of watching it unfold, because at that time I was in the studio. They were installing like the vinyl on the wall, and like I asked them, I was like, "Are you guys seeing what's happening on Twitter right now?" And I think Matt, who was like on a ladder, like putting something on the wall, was like, "I just saw Elon tweeted," because he had notifications on. I was like, "Yeah, I saw that too." And I just let him not know the rest. But yeah, it was a crazy time, and I think we'll remember that in the vast scheme of things that have happened in 2020. I think I'll remember that one.
That's
you know, I think I'll remember that one.
That's the most important thing that's happened in 2020. Years.
It's a lot.
Well, yeah. Okay, I think that's a great place to go off the rails right at the end of this episode.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah. I think that's about it. I mean, we'll be back to you guys with probably a little more regular next episode, but we're going to talk. I think we're right on the brink of smartphone season.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Where we're going to have, because it's about to be August, we're about to have probably finally like the Pixel come out. We're probably going to have that. We're definitely going to have that Samsung event with a bunch of hardware, and then Bixby speaker, and then phone after phone
when Bixby
after tablet.
Speaker comes out, we're doing an entire episode on it.
Absolutely.
2 hours of Bixby speaker.
2 hour live special. But I think we're right on the horizon of that.
I'm trying to look up. Sorry. We're right on the horizon of 1 year of the podcast as
well. Oh, really?
I'm trying to look it up because we started late July, early August.
Oh yeah, so
like let's
50
see.
Weeks.
Smartphone season was August 9th. Our next episode will be on August 7th.
All right.
So that will be the last episode of the first year of Waveform.
Let us know how you think we're doing.
Yeah.
And if you have feedback,
yeah,
this is the
sure.
most random winding path of an episode, but let us know what you guys think on Twitter at Waveform if you want to tweet at us. We went everywhere from 12K camera to OnePlus Nord to podcasts we like.
A plastic back Note 20.
A plastic back Note to like a YouTube vlogger from the bubble. This is everything. It's everything we could ever want. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys in the next one.
Waveform is brought to you with Studio 71, and our intro outro music was created by Cameron Barlow.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.